Mr. Andras Sakal. So Andras is responsible for IBM's industry solution technology strategy in support of the US federal customer. He was appointed an IBM Distinguished Engineer and Director of IBM's Federal Software Architecture Team in 2005. Andras is well known in the open group. He leads a department of technologists responsible for developing e-government software architectures using IBM technologies and solutions. His team's responsible for designing and deploying solutions to enable smarter government by applying innovative approaches to secure service-based computing and mission-critical systems. Inside the Open Group, Andras represents IBM Software Group. He's chair of our governing board. He's also chair of the Open Group Trusted Technology Forum, which is really our focus for today. And he leads the development of the Open Trusted Technology Provider Framework and is the primary author of ISO IEC 40423, which we like to call it the Open Group OTTPS. So welcome, Andras.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening from wherever you are in the world. I'm happy to be here with you, Steve.
Yeah, well, delighted to have you, Andras. So we're gonna get straight in. I see you're keeping well, and we talk enough to know that I know you and yours are doing okay. So it's great. Let's move on. I mentioned in the intro about the trusted technology provider. So we're going to talk a bit about supply chain security and trusted technology. What do we mean by a trusted technology provider?
Well, I think it's really just that. It's in this day and age where supply chain and cybersecurity have become more prominent, really because we're living our lives supported by and connected through commercially available technologies, the trend to network connected and digitally transformed world in which we live in has really been accelerated by this COVID-19 situation. And we need to conduct business remotely in ways we probably didn't imagine even last year. And so this is not going to go back to the way it was, done previously. This shift, probably because of economic reasons, is more or less permanent. And we're going to be more socially connected online. We're going to depend more technically. Digital transformation is going to occur more quickly. We're going to conduct business more deeply. And we're going to be more reliant on that technology for our national security and national critical infrastructure than we ever were before. So obviously the provenance and the trustworthiness of our suppliers now play a really significant role in their ability to address cyber risk, protection of our sensitive information, our privacy information, just the performance and quality and capability of that technology as well. With the world, our social change, our new business practices, politics, and national defense, in this environment, these realities then really dovetail into kind of this overall threat landscape of both cybersecurity and supply chain as we identify risks as it pertains to ICT suppliers. So that means, both the network and that technology that we use on the network.
Right. So, we talk about trusted, you've explained the relevance, the importance of it, and the growing need. Are governments, in your case, mostly focused on government customers, are governments and other customers actually looking for evidence of trusted technology providers, trusted technology in the supply chain?
Yes, they are. And in fact, we've had many changes to national policy worldwide around the governance and the process of ensuring the cyber capability as well as the supply chain continuity, as well as the trustworthiness of the supplier themselves. So, kind of comes down a little bit to provenance. You know, provenance discussion really boils down to the customer's ability to trust the ICT provider, you know, where the product is manufactured to a certain degree. There's additional risks that we talked about earlier, and some, you know, in terms of the political interests and potential conflict, considering we all are living globally now together, connected, there's more potential possible threats, you know, coming from everything from organized crime to nation state, and the effect on critical infrastructure and supply continuity really kind of all come together in one massively complex, you know, risk, sphere that we're having to, you know, address. And so all of these changes and policy updates are really kind of, in some way, focused on mitigating that risk and helping, you know, the end user decide whether they can trust the supplier and where they're manufacturing and the practices they use to protect their IP, as well as the continuity of their business and the product itself, so it doesn't include maliciously tainted or counterfeit components.
Right. So these threats, I mean, as you said, given the background and the context, I mean, these threats are growing clearly, not shrinking. Are there any in particular that are growing threats that we really need to be worried about more than, say, a year ago?
Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of back to provenance a little bit. Unfortunately, I think, you know, we've put, you know, a few too many, you know, eggs in one basket. One way to mitigate that risk would be to spread manufacturing more evenly, you know, worldwide. And I think that's really what countries are trying to, you know, push their consumers to do, is to push suppliers to provide, you know, a plan where they're able to have continuity of manufacturing, you know, from a global scale perspective, and not have a hotspot, you know, be affected by COVID-19 and it shuts down the entire planet. Right. I think that's really one of the areas that they're most interested in right now. This is another magnifying glass that COVID-19 put us all under.
Okay. So in the open group, we've been working on this topic for some time, and you've been right in the middle of it from the beginning. Since we published our OTTPS standard and that was adopted by ISO as a formal international standard, what kind of additional requirements are we being asked for in terms of a need to extend the standard? What are customers looking for that we didn't know about when we worked on the standard first version?
I think that when you boil down the risks, they're still kind of very much from a supply chain security perspective around preventing counterfeit and tainted, whether it's malicious or unintentional, it doesn't really matter. It's some component that gets in there that shouldn't have been in there, right?
Yeah.
But I do think that there are current laws that have come to the forefront that are, you know, asking us, when I say us, I mean the manufacturer, you know, my company being a manufacturer of products, you know, more information that can help them make a decision. So many of these, you know, recent policy changes have been centered around asking for additional context that can actually, the ISO 20243 standard OTTPS can certainly address. And, you know, NASA's done just a wonderful job of supporting that standard and making it part of the SOUP contract requirements. And I think that's definitely a good example of how we can actually, you know, mitigate by requiring certification in some form, whether it starts off as third party and goes to self-attestation.
Right.
That's another thing, but that's certainly an element of it.
Right. And what has been this sort of impact on companies and countries that have been affected by these kind of threats? Any tangible examples?
Well, countries that have been affected. Well, I do think that we've had national APTs that we didn't have to worry about before. This is all part of actually living our life and including national defense and security, in a networked world, right? Where, you know, that is actually considered the fourth domain now, right? So anytime you see that, you know, you're going to see an opportunity for either organized crime or potentially country level, interests come into play. So what we have to do now as manufacturers and customers is have a plan for how we actually assess the readiness of a manufacturer in the global environment to be able to protect themselves in this target-rich environment in which they live in. And part of that is continuity and risk assessment and constantly looking at the the threats and mitigating them in ways that actually make it more difficult for the supply chain to be undermined.
So this is heading towards more laws and regulations and policies, you think, at government level?
Well, more, I'm already sitting in a sea of policy changes in the last couple of years. The Secure Technology Act, which required agencies and state and local and critical infrastructure to begin to actually have a plan for supply chain security mitigation. You had the implementation of the 889 whitelist, blacklist, and that is actually just beginning to roll out. If your country and by proxy, your company is not playing by the established rules of the game, then you're going to get, temporarily banned or permanently banned from certain segments in the market, which obviously none of us want to actually have that happen because that limits your market opportunity. But right. These are real rules that are with real teeth that are being put into place. And you've got protection of unclassified sensitive information, PII information, not only from the GDPR point of view, but also from the NIST 800-171 perspective. As I'm on the DHS DOT Supply Chain Security Task Force, and we're rolling out some of these, suggestions that we've had. We just finished up one which changed the FAR so that the agencies are required to actually, procure from a trustworthy source, which you would have expected to be part of the FAR already, but, really wasn't there. And then the other one we're working on is helping these agencies understand the impact of the Secure Technology Act, because they're asking the providers, the vendors like IBM and others, for detailed lists of information about your suppliers. And there is a level of practicality here that is at play, right? You can't just ask me to drive a truck up and unload all my IP, and you don't want that either, right? So there's a balance here, and we're trying to find the balance, right? It's a it's a learning process.
Yeah. So how do you think the Open Group can help turn what is the current kind of ICT landscape and ecosystem into a greater percentage of trusted technology providers?
That's a great question.
What sort of things can we do as a community?
As a global standards and consortia, right, that is nonpartisan.
Yeah.
Really important here, because I think that Bruce Schneier, my old colleague, said it really well at RSA. He said that this is going to be a global manufacturing process. This is a complex problem. And that complexity and the manufacturing environment that we're living with today is one that we're going to have to work through. You're not going to be able to move everything to one space or another. That is never going to happen. So certainly a consortia where, we're the Switzerland of standards, where that we're actually facilitating conversation between industry and government is a really important place to be, because it's where a lot of these agreements and understandings come into play. One of the things that I think that, my government colleagues have learned from participating here in the OTTF is what it actually means to mitigate risk in the context of the global supply chain. Because when you're just an IT cybersecurity person or you're a policy person, you really don't have visibility into the day-to-day challenges that I'm faced with in manufacturing.
Right.
Group can do that wonderfully.
Right, right, right. So, and that is an area, I mean, bringing government and industry together, I mean, that's how the OTTF, the forum started, obviously, and we've done it in other areas. So the suggestion is maybe we can do that on a more global basis. I mean, obviously everyone's welcome in the OTTF, but there's a bigger role to play there as more and more governments seek to address the threats that that the US government is addressing and to some extent you're involved in. So we can look at that. How about skills, Andres? Individual talents. I mean, the Open Group does certifications of people as well as products and tools and many other things. Is there a role there, do you think?
Yeah, just, real quickly, I think that we're still, government in general, really doesn't understand the difference between professionalism and skills, right? So they understand that you need to have, exposure to classes and develop your skills. But what we need to get everybody to understand, and this is where the Open Profession Standard is, really shines, the framework we created, the profession framework that it manages OpenCA, OpenCTS, OpenCDS, and now the Open Trusted Technology Practitioner Standard shines, right? And that is the ability to take your skills and measure the application of skills through experience over your career in three different stages, early, mid, and later when you're actually able to make a substantive leadership impact. I think skills are important. Classes are important, but if you're not able to actually apply those, then you're, just basically grazing on classroom opportunities and
right.
Really applying them effectively, right? So that's really where I think the pedal hits the metal. That's where we have to actually, kind of understand how these skills are used and applied and what, we effectively need from a skilled professional workforce in these three different stages of your career.
Right, right. And that, and of course, a big part of that is, as you say, getting government or other particularly large customers to understand the value of certified professionals in that field. And that's something that we certainly can work on here in the Open Group. So, I guess last question, because we're running short of time. But what would your advice be to somebody who is interested in this area and thinking that clearly there's going to be a need for increased focus and increased skills in this area, how they might go about getting involved? What would your guidance be as someone who's been doing this a while now?
In the OTTF,
or even inside their own organization? What would they? How could they go about
right.
helping their organization see that there's value in having a set of professionals like you describe?
Right. Well, I think. I'd like to use my colleagues at Seagate as an example. I hope they don't mind, but they really embraced the standard ISO 20243, and they took it and internally used it as a guide map. And I'm sure there's some things that they didn't maybe 100% agree with or didn't align. I don't know, but it certainly seemed like it made a transformative effect on their corporation as to how they manage supply chain security. I'd say also to get involved, and if you have a good idea, they certainly did. They said, it would be great if you actually turn this, massive amount of capability into a professional standard, and they put their effort behind that. Get involved, contribute your IP to this discussion, if you think it's going to make a difference to your industry, this is a great place for where we can transform industries themselves. And we've seen this over and over again in the avionics industry, in the communications industry, in the oil and gas industry, in the mineral mining industry. It goes on and on and on, right? And so, but I do think there are technologies that you can actually then look at, you know, the work that we've done here and pick them up and actually apply them. And if you're an entrepreneur, the use of, you know, these fantastic scalable cloud platforms and services to manage the supply chain. Many of them are certified from a cybersecurity perspective, so you don't have to actually, you know, worry about that. You're starting from a basis of understanding that you're working in a secure environment. AI and enabled secure engineering and sec DevOps tools, applying zero trust architecture. I mean, you know, I think that's another area of evolving capability. And then I think you mentioned to me, you know, this idea of blockchain, and blockchain has been applied to securing the supply chain for sure. You know, you got all the stuff from, you know, farm to table, but you also have a way to actually now track, you know, technology components to ensure that they are the authoritative, non-counterfeit capable, you know, element that you're using in your supply chain.
Right.
And of course, the one that's kind of near and dear to my heart is AI to vet maliciously tainted components by conducting behavioral analysis of the solution itself. So you can apply this to, you know, everything all the way down to the micro, you know, chip level, to the system behavior itself.
Absolutely. And these standards that you and our other members have been working on, I mean, they're there to be consumed, they're there to be adopted and picked up by other organizations to help. You know, they don't have to reinvent the wheel. Let's you know, look at the standard and ideally get involved in its evolution. So
right, you know, when the tide rises, all boats float up. You know, whatever.
On risk, we're gonna run a tight ship this week, talking of floating, so we're gonna leave it there. I appreciate your insight as always, and thank you for coming on today and sharing what we're doing in this space and the direction that you think these things are moving in. It's something we all need to pay attention to, so big round of applause, virtual round of applause from the Open Group and its attendees. So thank you.
Thank you. And Steve, thank you for your leadership, you know, kind of, you know, helping guide us through this challenging time. So thank you. Back to you too as well.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Andres. Thank you.